Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard, Talk to Me Guy. And Sherry Edwards is out on tour. I know that makes it sound like a rock and roll show, but Sherry's on the road doing some classes and some intro workshops for various kinds of practitioners. And so she'll be reporting in, but today she's in an area with no reception. So today's going to be a fun show with Cynthia Sue Larson talking about the quantum jump, the quantum fields, a favorite hobby of mine. So I'm excited by this. So I'm going to remind you that right after the show, about 10 to 15 minutes after the show, you can go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Radio Archive Player, I think it's called. And the last five shows will be there. So that's one place that you'll be able to find the show. Because I know when we talk about the quantum field, people are going to want to listen to this again. And you can also go either to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts or any of your preferred podcast aggregators and search for Sherry Edwards and find the somewhere close to 600 shows. And this show will be at the top of the list. And once again, I would advocate for people to go to blogtalkradio.com and sign up for free. Costs you nothing. They don't spam you, really, that I've ever seen. And you'll be able to then follow the show and also get, there's a lot of shows there to listen to, not just ours, but I mean, there's a lot of people doing good work on Blog Talk Radio. And then that way you can also join the chat. I have people now signing into chat, which is always fun. So there's, I think that's all that. I do have an announcement and then we'll get going. This has to do with cannabis and this amazing occurrence. I'll call it amazing because I can't use any of the other words I'd like. So I'll call it amazing. The title of the article is, and I'll put this link in chat, The Pot Patent Puzzle, Analyzing the Ironies of Federal Marijuana Prohibition. So a quote from the article is, as a professor who researches and teaches in the area of patent law, I've been monitoring how private companies are quietly securing these patents on cannabis-based products and methods of production, even though marijuana remains a Schedule I drug. An even richer irony is that the government itself has patented a method of administering a therapeutically effective amount of cannabinoids. So it's illegal. It's a Schedule I. Schedule I means that it's like heroin and opiates. Schedule I means that in order to do research on it, you have to get some kind of clearance, or I'm not sure what it's called, from the DEA. And then you also have to use cannabis that is grown on, I think, government authorized, or for all I know, the government is growing cannabis. I wish they'd pass it around Congress. That's a separate show. So this is really astonishing. So it sounds like, and if you read the article, it sounds a lot like, you know, we're getting all this locked up. Then maybe we'll figure out if we want to take it out of Schedule I. I don't know. I find it amazing. That's how I'll look at it. And I really wonder if the companies that are securing patents will do better or worse than when a big pharmaceutical company produced a product called Marinol, which was a cannabinoid extract that didn't work because they didn't know what they were doing in terms of extraction, or people really don't think, particularly in the pharmaceutical realms, they don't think of cannabis as a whole compound, meaning marijuana, cannabis, as a whole compound. In other words, everything that's in there because it's a whole plant food. It's not something that's synthesized. And so you want kind of that idea of a whole food. They keep thinking that pharmaceutical, like, here's the thing that does that, and that's all we want it to do. Cannabis really likes to be a whole product, concentrated, but still having those other elements in there. So I will post that in chat. Now, on to the fun. Cynthia Sue Larson, the quantum optimist, is the best-selling author of Quantum Jumps, Reality Shifts, and High Energy Money. She's an intuitive spiritual life coach who helps people find love, meaning, and prosperity by visualizing and accessing new worlds of possibility. Cynthia has a degree in physics from UC Berkeley, an MBA degree, a Doctor of Divinity, as well as a black belt in Kuk Sool Wan. Cynthia has been featured in numerous shows, including Gaia TV, The History Channel, Coast to Coast AM, and BBC. Cynthia Sue Larson's newest book, Quantum Jumps, describes the science of instantaneous transformation emerging from the convergence of recent research findings in physics, biology, and physiology. Cynthia joins us to talk about Quantum Jump and to remind us to ask in every situation, how good can it get? Cynthia, I have to ask, how did an MBA and a degree in physics from UC Berkeley with a Doctor of Divinity get you into jumping into the quantum fields? How did that occur?
Well, this is an interesting story, and I've got different versions, the short, the medium, and the long. And I guess the short version would be that I had a series of extraordinary experiences, and those experiences really got me to question the nature of everything that I'd been taught, especially in just everyday college and school and by the typical cultural beliefs. So, and you may wonder, what were those experiences? Well, that's where it's a long story. But the short version of that is I witnessed things that seem impossible following what's known as a Kundalini awakening. So and the Kundalini awakening was basically a feeling that I was just like on fire with electricity, but not really electricity. It was a kind of energy running through my body, which happened spontaneously and ran for a few weeks when I was about 32 years old back in 1994. So that was the tipping point. That was the trigger, the activation, the catalyst by which I believe subsequently I started really being unable to ignore massive changes to reality. And so all of these events and experiences are very meaningful to me. And what they did is they inspired me to look deeper into my own path. And that's what led me to recognize that the nature of reality is not what we tend to be taught that it is by Western scientific teachings, but instead has a lot more in common with what is taught in very ancient spiritual wisdom traditions.
Do you think that we're taught, or I would call it an agreement, we are taught this agreement that that is how things are? I don't mean the quantum field things. I mean that we take on this agreement, we all hold this agreement that's like, that's how this is. You have to do this to get there, versus the idea of what you're talking about of the idea of stepping into the quantum field and being engaged in the quantum field, that we have sort of learned, or I'll use Sherry's word, and trained to have this agreement.
I would say that's a very good way to summarize it. And it's similar also to what Gurdjieff said, that we are in a way sleepwalking, that we're not fully aware of what's going on. So there's a similarity with both of those mental constructs of viewing it, that in because if we look at brainwashed or that we're believing something that's not true, then oftentimes people assume that there must be an us and a them, and that they must be keeping us hostage on some kind of a prison planet or something like that. And in other words, it becomes more of a storyline that people can relate to, with good guys, bad guys, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the Gurdjieff approach, it's more a recognition that naturally there's an inclination, for whatever reason, to not be fully aware and to be mostly in a subconscious state. So I tend to lean in that direction of the explanation. So rather than getting it set up so that there's some huge conspiracy going on, I think typically scientists are doing their best to understand reality, and they think that their senses are telling them the truth, and they think they can believe that. So we've got an entire methodology set up where we measure what we can sense and perceive, and then put that on a pedestal of sorts and assume that that's all there is, even though that's patently ridiculous.
And she drops the mic and walks off stage. I love that. Oh, that is great. That is so true. Paintly ridiculous. Yes. There is that. So let me, I want to ask a couple of foundational questions. But first, I have a question from the audience. Did you lose friends as you started your journey into the quantum fields and quantum jumping? Did friends wander off, or did you have friends that were just not able to, like, get it or go with it or roll with it, or
right.
I don't know what the word would be?
Well, part of it's a this is always a two-way thing, and I noticed when I got excited about what was happening to me, and I noticed that I could have a strong positive effect on other people's energy and their lives, I got a little perhaps too excited, so I could see people stepping back away from me. I knew that there was something wrong when I would talk about some of these ideas when it was early in my awakening, and I just I realized that can be a bit strong for some people who don't want to hear about the interconnectedness of all things, or that we have an influence on one another, or there can be non-local effects, these kinds of ideas. And so I would see people literally take a couple steps back from me as I would talk. They'd ask what's going on with me, and then I'd make the mistake of going past the small talk and into, like, oh my gosh, I've had the most amazing things happening. So then I learned, okay, don't talk about those things generally to next door neighbors, you know, people that you see at the grocery store, and you know, just regular people everywhere, unless they really obviously want to go deeper with it, because it can be unsettling, and people often don't like their belief constructs questioned or rattled. It just feels like an earthquake happening to their beliefs. So yes, there's definitely a distancing that happens with
yeah.
some people.
Yeah. Now I have a question, a couple of what I'll phrase as foundational questions, getting a framework. What is the difference between mind and brain?
Okay, it's a good one. And I think brain is definitely the description of a bodily organ that we would locate inside of our physical body, and we would located inside of the cranial cavity. We definitely agree that there are skull bones protecting it, that it's sitting up on top of our spinal column and so forth, that it has different layers to it, that it consists of cells and so forth. Whereas mind is much more of a mental construct. In other words, it's not so much a physical thing we can point at, and it's something that we would typically recognize as being part of our conscious awareness, that the mind is how we would be able to recognize what it is to be me. And that's a very huge idea right there. What is me? You know, who am I? And the part of our conscious awareness that can ask these questions and have a feeling of knowingness about that, that would be mind. And so some people would equate the two and say, well, they're the same thing. And then some people, like myself, would say that's, again, ridiculous, that the brain is not the same thing as the mind. They're not equivalent, and we can't, I don't believe it's possible to look inside the brain, even down to the level of neurons, and be able to say, okay, we found it, here's the mind.
I think of, as you say that, and I was visualizing it for me, I think of the mind as the file drawer. You know, it's like I know there's a bunch of stuff in my mind. The brain
right.
seems to be, I don't know, I'll relate it to the quantum field. The brain is almost the, I don't know. It's that's such a big question. We could spend the whole show just talking about that, because I know that I can contextualize that the mind is the file system. Well, although in my case, it's mostly a box of marbles.
Well, the brain could be the file cabinet.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, the brain is interesting because people are finding that there definitely is some kind of interaction going on. And I would talk with scientists such as the recently parted Walter Freeman, who is doing research here at UC Berkeley and is part of the Foundations of Mind conference that I help organize. And so what he was doing is looking at the way that there can be sort of this connection between what's observed in an organism and the way that the neural pathways seem to be working, and that there does seem to be some kind of a conscious process that's happening. And so there definitely is a connection between the mind and the brain. So I'm not saying there isn't, or that they're disconnected. I guess what I think is so interesting is that clearly, for those of us who've had communications, for example, with people who are deceased and there's no more brain functioning, but there does seem like there's still a mind, or when people have a near-death experience and they're recorded as being physically dead for a period of time, yet during that time, somehow, they're cognizant of what's going on around them. And I believe these reports. I know people who've had experiences like this. Then clearly there's something beyond what's happening just within the neurons themselves. So there's something that's bigger than that, that there's this intrinsic kind of consciousness somehow that touches into our physical reality, but perhaps goes deeper, goes farther, is more fundamental.
For a few years, I was around, not directly intentionally, I was just around a number of people who had either had near-death experiences or death experiences. And the ones that had the experience where they had come, you know, a couple of people I can think of, Mellon Thomas is one of the more renowned ones because he's done a lot of speaking, that he died and he knew he was dying from something he was in hospice. And he chose his period of time as he was in hospice to do a tremendous amount of reading and research on death and dying and religion. And so he was fully cognizant. And when he died, he said he got to the moment of the classic moment of being at the light. He said, "Wait a minute, I have questions." And he had a conversation with the light. Now, whatever metaphor you choose to insert here for the metaphor of the light, that's your, you know, everybody's choice.
Yeah.
But it was really amazing how he really stopped, and at some point he was drawn back into his body, and he didn't die, and he cleared his disease, his illness.
Right. A number of experiencers of this near-death experience have that happen, where they can seemingly miraculously overcome things that had been considered medically impossible to cure. Like Anita Murjani is another near-death experiencer who came back and miraculously was healed.
Uh-huh.
So there are a number of cases like that, and you're right. That also tips us off that there's something deeper, that the mind or consciousness is able to do something fundamentally to alter physical reality.
Uh-huh.
And that's the sort of thing I've been feeling like I'm experiencing when I notice quantum jumps and reality shifts.
Yeah. Somebody in chat is saying, like, split personality. Yeah. It was really amazing being around these. I think of a young man a number of years ago. This was before I had some research in alternative arenas. But I worked with a guy in a restaurant who'd had open heart surgery back when that was a big deal. I mean, not that it isn't a big deal now, but I mean, back when they cracked you open and it was like a really aggressive procedure.
Right.
And he had died on the operating table, and he had the whole experience of being out of his body and floating over the scene. And really what he got at that moment was a stunning amount of peace.
Yes.
He was just in a state of, you know, I'm not sure what that would be called, but, you know, just in an amazing state of ease, considering he, you know, some part of him thought he was dying, and the other part was like, wow, look at that. That's amazing. Look at all these people down there racing around, and the guy with his hands in my chest, and what's that? What are they doing? But the whole time he was observing, he was in totally unattached peace.
And that's what I would consider the first step in executing a quantum jump, when you're going to make this kind of a switch from one physical reality to another. It needs to begin with that sense of being detached, energized, and observing what you think yourself to be. You know, basically identifying instead of with your body, identifying with yourself as being mind or consciousness.
Billion. Billy Milligan is from our town, and he had several split personalities. This may help people who are on the edge of understanding what we're talking about here. One of his personalities spoke ancient Arabic. One was allergic to oranges. One was a diabetic. There were so many totally different personalities. Is this like what you're talking about? His was actually investigated and proved to be real in each case with blood tests.
Yes.
Is this what you're talking about? And is it a split? Is it a different?
I think that's a great way to take a look at it for people who've heard of multiple personality or split personality. And we tend to think of that as a disorder. However, some of us in emergency situations can easily, or without knowing quite what we're doing, be able to become super strong. Like you hear about the woman lifting a car off of a child, and she's just a small person. And how did she do that? How did she become super human at that point? She's like Wonder Woman. And it, myself, I've been able to fill in for a drummer on stage when the drummer on a performing group of musicians walked away and the song needed a drummer. And somehow I could just, my hands wanted to drum. I've never drummed before in my life. And I could feel the rhythm and I felt like I knew what I was doing. And then the strangest thing happened and I felt like I need to go up on stage and play the drums because I think I could do it. And I did, and it was quite strange. So I'm just saying, but when you go with that sort of experience and you recognize, okay, maybe there's this superposition of states, we'd call it in physics, that, in other words, maybe there are an infinite number of possible me's, an infinite number of possible you's, and one of the possible us's can speak a different language or have knowledge about medicine or music or whatever it may be, or have super physical strength. You know, people try to explain these things away, but when it comes to suddenly knowing a language that you'd never learned or having a complete intolerance to a certain substance and a tremendous allergy, like we see with multiple personalities, that to me indicates these individuals are definitely, for whatever reason, tapping into this superposition of states, this quantum consciousness, and they're very good examples of this, of exactly what we're talking about. Although ideally, we wouldn't want someone to be experiencing these sort of out of control switches, but being able to more fluidly move through your life and gain the skills that you need without too much effort and become the more confident, healthy person that you'd like to be without, again, without too much struggle.
Wow, that sounds great. I'll take that workshop. I think it's your book. How do you suggest that people can, do you feel that people can learn to, you know, find that space or this space, all those spaces? I'm not sure how to phrase that. Space, because the space is so big. Slide in and out effortlessly? Do you slide in and out effortlessly?
Yes, my belief is that we all do move through realities without noticing we're doing it. But the reason it doesn't seem to grab our attention is that it's usually happening at what you might call rather small levels of operation. So rather than going from having cancer one minute to not having any cancer the next, some people do experience that. But most of us would just experience little tiny shifts, little tiny jumps. And you might notice it. People often notice these things when you're walking down a hallway and it just seems like there's a jump in your consciousness. You start walking down the hallway thinking one thing. By the time you get to the end of it and go through a doorway, often we don't remember what we were doing. And it can almost be like you're a different person. So there's, I'm just bringing that one up so people can relate to the feeling. So they get like that feeling of, I think I've experienced that. And it's just like suddenly what did matter to you doesn't. You're in a different train of mind. And you could be definitely experiencing the benefits of it. So I believe we are doing this all the time. But then to, just like when we breathe, you're breathing all the time. But then when you practice yoga or Tai Chi or Qigong or martial arts, then you can start using your breath to experience extraordinary transformations in your life. And I think quantum jumping is very much like that. Learning to take a natural process where typically we just make incremental changes that don't seem that unusual, like watching a movie frame by frame by frame, and you look at any two frames, and they're almost identical. So if you were to say what's different between these two frames, you'd say nothing's different. That's how typical quantum jumping is to us. It's just frame by frame by frame by frame. And from one frame to the next, there's hardly any difference, or everything's changing a little bit. But sometimes you can literally make an extraordinary change. And that's the advantage of learning what's involved with quantum jumping, opening your mind to the possibilities, and learning to trust it, feeling safe with it, and learning that good things can come from it.
I'm pausing because I'm thinking about, for example, you think about athletic performers, and I mean, let's say Olympic athletes. And pretty much any time I've seen some sort of focus athlete, I mean, so much not, well, even the runners, they'll talk about how they get into a zone. And I know it's a combination of practice, and on a cellular level, their body knows that, you know, this is happening, so it all settles into, like, this is what we're doing. But they're not really thinking right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. They're in a zone of non-thought. And do you think part of that is not only their body memory, but also stepping, they have some thing where they step into a zone or a quantum field in a certain way?
Yes, I think this gets to very similar to what we were talking about with the near-death experiencers, that there is a capability for any of us to just get into that mindful sort of meditative state. And it's where, again, you're not necessarily thinking so much. You're actually basically transcending any of the day-to-day worries, concerns, thoughts, and feelings. And so it's just this basically attaining a state of awareness where you're comfortable with everything that is, that you're able to be the observer, just able to watch thoughts and feelings go by, not attaching to them. And that is really very similar to the athletic zone, because for an athlete in the zone, you often hear about it when they're long distance running or swimming, and they're engaged in an activity to the point that that's all they're focusing on. And that's a very mindful state where they're unable to contemplate the fears and the worries and the, you know, the mental anguish that people put themselves through regularly. And so when you get into that detached, energized state, that's ideal. It's optimal, because from there, that's the place, just like with a near-death experiencer, you can feel like everything's fine because you're not worried about things. You're not fretting about them. From there, it then becomes possible, if you wish to, envision the many possible realities that are available to each of us. And that would be a place where, if you don't know what's best, then I recommend asking my favorite question, how good can it get, which can be an optimal guider. It's like a guidance system that takes you on your highest level trajectory, because you're on some level, your imagination knows what's best for you, tends to be also best for everyone else, instead of exclusively good only for you. And then you can bypass some of the short circuit problems that people get into when they inadvertently try to do something for themselves and it's selfish or a dead end in some way. But when you're part of something that's truly good, that's bigger than any one person, that's in service to a bigger ideal of goodness, and if you don't know what that is, again, you can just ask, how good can it get? I love that one. And I've had some of my most mind-blowing miracles happen with that question. If you have a specific idea, you can definitely do that. And this is where the athletes often get prompting from their coaches to envision perfect performance and realize that reality is out there. So a swimmer would see themselves doing a perfect swim. A runner would see perfect performance on running. And for you, whatever it is you do, you could see yourself enjoying it, really feeling a sense of empowerment with it, passion, purpose, fulfillment, recognition, and respect, that you're just part of everything, and that it's as you succeed, you're helping others. I keep emphasizing that point because in our Western culture, it's often not pointed out. And I personally found that it's one of the areas that people often can benefit the most when they bring that little component in and they recognize that they're definitely in service with others and part of something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so these are the first two steps of quantum jumping, just getting, like you said, into that zone. And then imagining, envisioning, just seeing what's there. And if your imagination seems stuck, then give it the question to your imagination. How good can it get? Demand to know. It really needs to be a feeling of passionate inquiry, that you really need to care, like how good can it get, rather than focusing, again, another shortfall. Commonly, as people tend to expect the worst, they sort of see bad signs, or they tend to look for problems. I think our brains are wired that way so we can notice when things go wrong, but we don't want that to hijack our sense of higher purpose.
It almost seems like a, in the early stages, it seems like a quantum act as if. You
right.
Direct your thought to where you want it to go, and then you do that quantum act as if.
That act as if is the third step, really. It's just,
oh, okay.
You come out of this whole meditation, and that's the takeaway, that's the homework. So now you're done meditating, you're out of the zone, time to get back to your daily life. And as you move through your daily life, you act as if you're on that trajectory. Even though you might see no evidence yet, you do things that are in keeping with the fact that you're no longer a smoker, or that now you care more about your diet and you're not eating sugar anymore, or whatever it is it might be that's part of that new trajectory.
Mm-hmm. I'm laughing because I was flashing back. I'd written this comment down on the notes as I was reviewing the book, and I had an aha moment that Dorothy from Wizard of Oz is like a poster child for quantum jumps in a certain way. You know,
right.
she stands there and she envisions, you know, where she wants to go. And for her, she clicks her heels three times and she's there.
Right.
That's like,
you're right about that.
That's amazing. That's such a great cinematic for those of us that are old enough to know who Dorothy is in the quantum, in the Wizard of Oz, the real Wizard of Oz, no remakes. Real munchkins, none of these graphic, you know, computerized munchkins.
Right.
You know, that she is such a poster child for that. That's an amazing concept. You know, it just made me laugh out loud. I like had to set down the book and just, you know, have a good laugh about it, because it was just, wow, Dorothy, a thought leader. Who knew?
And you can see it in her companions as well, that the Tin Man, you know, just felt like if he only had a heart. And then he finds out, like, well, he does. And the straw man is questioning that he's not very intelligent and he can't think about things. And then he realizes that he can, that he does have that cognitive ability, that he has a brain, and so forth. Yeah, I don't know if people have watched the original. You're right about that. The original is the best. We're talking about the Judy Garland original movie.
Yeah, the real, what I would call the real Wizard of Oz. I'm sorry to everybody else. Once you've seen the real one, it's hard to look at graphics, you know, and it's so cinematically fun to watch. It was a big deal when it came out. And also it just visually, it was great. It's a favorite. But I was really laughing when I had that, like, oh my God, Dorothy and her red slippers were, you know, that was like a deal. Wow. Who knew?
That's a great observation. And I think people resonate with the story for that purpose and for that reason, that they recognize that everything we need is within. Again, it's that spiritual wisdom that we've heard from the perennial philosophies. And this is something that I find is important to be on track with when you start making conscious quantum jumps, that it's important to recognize that it's really all about what are we living for. And if we ignore that question and go with some shallow, superficial thing, such as material success, or some, you know, lesser idea of power, or I don't know what, but, you know, things that can lull us into complacency and make us feel like we don't need to improve ourselves, that we're all done with that, and now we can just enjoy the spoils of this material existence. This is kind of the nature of so-called evil, where people fall off course and get kind of sidelined. And I bring it up because as soon as people start doing these quantum jumping steps, they will, and everybody can start noticing that you magnetize and attract and start experiencing everything you're thinking about. So it's sort of a prompt and a nudge to get clean internally so that you're not creating chaos in your exterior life.
Sometimes when we have guests, we do their vocal print online. And yours is very revealing that you are an emotional information broker. And when we look at your vocal print, says you have a high degree of intuition when it comes to listening to what people are not saying. That's beautiful.
That's so beautiful.
There's another thing. As a natural leader, you sometimes get stuck with more than your share of work. Your connection to universal truths demand your time. You take pleasure in changing things for the better. You have the ability to use words very creatively. You have the ability to inspire people using stories and demonstrations. And people who are listening, and since I created this system, this lady is the real deal. Go buy her book, Quantum Jumps.
And everything you're saying is accurate, even the things that are a little embarrassing. like you take on too much work. Oh, my gosh. It's like, have you been – this is amazing. So I'll just give a shout-out for your work, too, because that's something that's I don't think it was obvious from what I was saying with my words, but you read it correctly. Exactly.
There is another thing about your courage to go to source and ask for clarification. Question I wanted to ask also, but the program that I used for this is Nano Voice, and we give it away to the people listening to our show. So we invite all of you to go to soundhealthoptions.com and go to download and download this program so that you can test Cynthia's voice also. We've got some questions about how do you get in the zone? I don't know if you can answer that one. And then there's one other question about current reality. You talk about this in your book, about moving from current reality to desired reality. And sometimes I think people don't know what their desired reality is, because maybe it's the neighbor's wife and they haven't thought about those consequences. The movie The Secret did wonderful things for this concept, but they left out the piece of how do we know what we really want to think about down the road where we're going. When you go into this zone, does it clarify that kind of thing for you? And I've asked you 3 or 4 questions. So just
you sure have. I love it. Well, as long as you keep me on track, I'll do my best to follow that thread. And those are great questions. So how do we, which one would you like me to start with? Do you have a preference?
How do you get in the zone?
Okay, how do I get in the zone? And this ties in with your vocal print and some of the things you were noticing. My personal preferred way to get into that zone is through a daily practice of meditation. And I've got a meditation CD that summarizes a process that I went through myself that took about a year. I was doing 3 hours of meditation a day, 1.5 hours in the morning, 1.5 hours at night. And you may wonder what prompted that. Well, it was a long story, but my favorite pet had passed away and died, and I was devastated. It felt like a family member to me. That's how it all started. And then after 2 weeks of not being able to eat or get off the sofa, my family, my daughters and husband at the time said, just go on a walk. He used to like that. So I went on a walk, and during that walk, I felt like I was walking with Jesus Christ, actually. And I'd never been that much of a Christian, per se, and I hadn't really gone to church that much. But what I noticed was he was telling me that you've been awfully hard to reach, and then he was showing me what the reality of everything looked like to him. And that pulled me out of the funk, because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. To see through his eyes was to see love everywhere. Was to see like we are in this kingdom of heaven all around us, and everything is light, everything is love. I was so blown away. So I looked at him and I said, I want to see the way that you see. And he showed me a meditation that's possible to do, just 3 simple parts. And that's the 1.5 hours that I was doing twice a day. So the first part is just being in the presence of divine source, which is every time different than the last time I've experienced it, because it's so big, it's so vast that it's not always the same, obviously. And when I really feel it, then I can feel it flowing through me. I can feel that I'm in the presence of this divine source energy. That's about 20 minutes or so. And the next part is receiving that energy and flowing it through me and just letting it clear out everything that's not unconditional divine love. And then for me, the third part that I do is I just become a point source of light. You can think of it like your angelic self, just shining light. And that energy process makes me feel extremely empowered, illuminated, and I can feel all sorts of mind, body, spirit issues just flying away, just clearing right up. So I now do a much shorter version. I don't do 3 hours a day necessarily. That's a lot of time, but I do some variation of that where I basically recognize that there is a calling for me to be in the highest service to all that is and to the highest feeling of good, and to make a choice each day that is what's empowering me, guiding me, inspiring me, and directing me, so that even things that may seem like they're going wrong, I might realize, okay, I need to be here for some reason, and everything's just right somehow. So that's a long-winded explanation. But then I've made this CD available, so if people like that approach, then it's on iTunes for like $3, or you can get the CD and so forth. So it's a very wonderful access way for people who feel inspired to go that route. I think your next question was, what can people do? There's so many paths to get into that state of flow, that zone, and it can be as easy as combining a favorite activity with some way of just a favorite way to focus your mind. Because what you want to do is get your mind, body, and spirit into alignment. And there are so many different ways. Some people go on a walk in nature, and for them, that's a meditation. Some people close their eyes, focus on their breathing, and just really process how that feels. And there's so many other different combinations and ways to do it. So I think when people experiment and just try a few different things, you can find a way to focus your mind, either by watching and observing your thoughts or focusing on your breathing. And then combine that with an activity, which could be doing dishes. I mean, it could be something you have to do anyway, or it might just be sitting quietly or walking in nature. And then making this just a daily activity so that you can, at first it might not seem like anything's happening, but eventually just giving yourself a break from what you might not realize is torment by having your brain just being so hyperactive and so judgmental. Because there's this part of our mind that's constantly observing, and we need to learn to work with it and to let it be our friend and let it be aimed in a positive direction. And that's what meditation can help to do. And I forget your third question.
Well, I'll bring it back. One of the things that Richard said was this near-death experience brought an incredible unconditional peace. And maybe there's a place where people can look within themselves what brings them that peace. Because I think we're all looking for direction of what brings us peace and grace and harmony. And you mentioned back, that's a third step. Do you have the steps? Is that what you were talking about? Those are the steps to get there?
Yes, well, for quantum jumping, I was saying the first thing is to become detached and be in that observer state so that you can recognize that what's happening, it may seem like the world is falling apart or people are treating you unfairly, but then you can sort of notice how you're feeling and what you're thinking. And as you do that process of watching and observing your thoughts and feelings, then that's that detachment I'm talking about. Then you can start caring about yourself, kind of like you want to give yourself a hug, like, oh, goodness, going through a rough time there. You know, this is a little rough. No wonder you're upset. You know, things are a little bumpy here. But then as you're observing yourself and noticing, you know, feeling bad, feeling like things aren't so good, that very process of stepping back and observing means that you are in the mind. You're in consciousness, which means you're able to make a jump. So you can then observe, what do you need? You know, you're observing how you feel, and you can ask, what do you need? And for those that don't know what you need, usually everybody needs love. They need understanding. We need a sense of meaning and purpose and being in service. You know, these are the true needs. We may think we need money and fame and power, but usually that's fleeting stuff and it doesn't really satisfy the deeper sense of spirit and what we really need at the core. So getting
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, getting authentic with yourself is so important, being honest with yourself. So that's another reason I love your vocal print work, because this may illuminate things for people. And I encourage people to be courageous with that.
That was the follow-up question. When you talk in your book about helping people move from current to desired reality, that was the last part of my question.
Okay, right. So when you notice there's a discrepancy between what you'd like things to be and where they are, then you could think of that as kind of looking at, solving a problem of sorts. And you could say, okay, well, where did that go wrong? Or how did this go off course here? You know, this isn't where I wanted to be. And that's one approach, is to look at what the cause might be. And that's a very mental process. Another approach would be, there's nothing wrong with that approach, by the way. That's a very rational, Boolean logic kind of method where you look back and see, okay, here's where it all went wrong. But sometimes, because we humans tend to believe that what's already happened is done and over with, and most of us have been taught by our culture that we can't change what's in the past. You can tell by the way I'm saying this, I don't necessarily believe that, and I don't believe that. But most of us have been taught these things because we've never seen anything other than that. I have seen things other than that. So, in other words, I've seen long-standing health problems just be instantly transformed or transmuted, that these kinds of changes are possible. But if you haven't witnessed all those things, then there is another way to do it, and that's to recognize maybe there's already another reality out there that is in the position or the place that you'd like to be. And if that does exist, and I would say, yes, it does, then it just takes a certain amount of energy. You could think of it as spiritual energy, conscious energy, to make that jump in the form of consciousness. And to do it, you may wonder, how do we do it? You just need to feel aligned with this sense of higher goodness, higher purpose, that when you make that jump, you are in service, that you're doing it to be part of something bigger, that you're doing it for a good reason, a good cause. Because when we do that, then we know that we deserve good things. And otherwise, people can sometimes feel like they're stuck, or maybe they feel like they've done bad things and they're being burdened by that sense.
I want to redirect slightly. We're still definitely in the quantum field. In Quantum Jumps, you discuss the doubling of the placebo effects in the past 30 years. Can you talk about that?
Yes, this is really interesting. And the strongest such doubling has occurred in the United States of America. And researchers at the Harvard Study for Placebo Studies, they were some of the ones noticing this. And I don't think there's a clear, definite answer as to what's happening here. But one thing that is interesting to me is that the placebo effect started off pretty strong to begin with, that it was already, if people don't know what placebo is, it comes from the Latin meaning I shall please, or to please. And the original placebos were developed in World War II on the battlefield when medicines and medical supplies ran out. The doctors and the medics in the field needed to treat the soldiers who were wounded and feeling great pain, but they'd run out of the pain treatment. And so what they did is they looked around in their medical bags and did what doctors have always done ever since there were shamans and medical practitioners, and that is you work with what you've got and you treat your patient with great love and just the hopes that they're going to feel better. And so what the doctors had was salt water. They would put that into a solution and give an injection of that to the soldiers. And to their surprise, they were happily surprised, but many of the soldiers would feel that their pain subsided. The doctor would come back on the rounds and say, how are you feeling? And the soldiers would say, I'm feeling better. Thank you. That really helped. So this was the beginning of the placebo. Then we've since then seen sugar pills In other words, we're familiar with the medical placebos where patients are given something that has no known physical positive results, but we notice that patients do experience a positive result. Placebos are also used in medical pharmaceutical trials where there's a control group of people that receive a placebo with the expectation that there should be no improvement in their condition. And then this is where it gets really interesting, because the placebo effect, as I said, started out in the 20 to 30% effective range. That's huge. It's already challenging for some of our pharmaceutical medicines to meet or bypass that. It's hard for them to clear and do better than a placebo. But just in the past 30 years, there's been a doubling. So it's just gone from, you know, maybe, you know, the low 20% up to around 40% efficacy. And with people of faith, people like me who already know that the placebo effect works and feel very spiritual, then the placebo effect is at least 70% effective, and it could be all the way to the 90%. So it becomes kind of like the perfect thing, because you get all the good benefits, and obviously there can also be a nocebo effect. In other words, people can actually get side effects from this imaginary treatment if they believe such side effects might occur.
Mm.
You know, the long list of things like, you know, drowsiness, nausea, all those things
right.
You hear.
Isn't that, wow, the mind is amazing.
That
child box of information is just amazing. It was over 10 years ago, I was actually working with somebody who was interviewing Andrew Weil, and I was sitting in the audience and talked about him, so this was more than 10 years ago, and he was talking about his early research when he was writing books on MTOs, because that was some of his original writing, was traveling the world looking at people, you know, consuming MTOs and himself trialing those and then documenting that. And he was talking about in his medical realm when he was teaching that he was doing research on placebos, or well, it was actually a byproduct. He observed by looking through patient files that he accrued through all of his reviews of the medications they had been taking that, and this is medical studies, that more than 50% of the time a placebo was as, if not more, effective.
Yes.
And
well,
that's 10 years ago he said that.
Yeah, he's right on the money there. And that gentleman is really tuned in. So I'd say he was ahead of his time in recognizing these things. And since that time, this is where we've got the Harvard Study Center for Studying Placebo Effect. And people are looking at things such as the way that we can act as if, which is that third step in quantum jumping. And it's also what William James, the first American psychologist, recommended that people do. Just act as if you have a quality, act as if you are, excuse me, well or healthy or whatever it is. And I would suggest do the first two steps also for best results, you know, get into that detached state of mind through some kind of meditative energetic practice, and then ask how good it can get, or visualize yourself and your best possible future self way of being, and then act as if. So kind of I'd recommend all those parts of it for best results.
Yeah. And I'm surprised to find that we're coming around the bend. What would be, I have to say to everybody, go out, get Cynthia's book, get Quantum Jumps. It's a great review, read, research, fun. That's enough. You know, it's a great guide. You know, quantum, we're going to hear a lot more as she discusses. If we had another hour, we'd talk about all the possible quantums, use of the word quantum and how that's going to be in effect. I like the term quantum biology, but that's a different show.
Yeah.
What would you say is one of the big parts, or for you, the most exciting part about your book that you'd like to share that we can get people to go out and get Quantum Jumps?
Well, I think it's a tough, that's a two-way tie between the scientific research studies, because I love the way the book describes the things that are happening in laboratories that actually are working to you know, it may seem like a stretch for people who are very skeptical, like, well, that, how can that be? You know, that you can just do this one thing and feel happier, or that your relationship can be better. I love that. And I love the firsthand reports from quantum jump experiencers. Some, and they progressively get stranger and more far out as you go through the book. Starts out kind of normal, or something that you might think of that you'd see on TV. And then by the end of the book, it's like, what? What's going on here? Like, this whole pub is different than it was before. Or a gentleman avoided getting hit on the head with a thundering pile of steel girders, you know, or someone on the freeway completely, it seems like they went right through an oncoming vehicle and now they're on the other side. You know, how are these things possible? But I've heard so many firsthand reports from people, and I've experienced some of these things myself, so that I know for sure these things are happening. And I think that's the most empowering quality of this book, Quantum Jumps, is to challenge our subconscious mind with what we think is normal and possible, and to start opening things up so that we can live to our highest sense of ability and capability in this world.
Mm-hmm. And do you do webinars or classes or any online events yet or now?
Not yet. Yeah, right. I do conferences. So I'll be helping to coordinate a conference on consciousness in San Francisco at the California Institute of Integral Studies next Friday. And often I'm helping coordinate those kind of events in person for scientists publishing papers and so forth, talking about the quantum paradigm and all that. But as far as working with individuals, mostly right now, it's on a case-by-case individual basis. I do coaching sessions, which could be informative. So if people want to explore from their own place, their own experience, I do mostly one-on-one. And I feel and I find that the nature of this work seems to lend itself best to that, because people really do arrive from very different places of belief and individual issues. So I prefer to work one-on-one. And so far, that's what I've been doing.
And where would you suggest people follow you? I'll put all these links in the show notes. You have a Facebook page, you have a blog, you have a website. What are the good places, or what would you direct people toward to follow you on?
Right. The best way is to sign up for my newsletter through my realityshifters.com website. And if you click on news, then you can just subscribe, and that would put you on an email list. So you'll get a monthly email, which would indicate here are the new YouTube videos, here are the new blog posts, here are the new articles, the new events, and as well as a nice handful of firsthand reports of quantum jumps and reality shifts from around the world, and maybe a book review or two. So it's just a well-rounded little magazine that comes once a month. And I think that's definitely the best way.
Great.
Once again, realityshifters.com.
Yeah, I'll put that in show notes, and we'll have that at the page for the show. We'll have that in there, because that's a great, I signed up. I think it's a great idea to start. It's so great time to be looking at quantum jumping.
Yes.
I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
It's always a good time, but yes, I agree.
Thank you. Sherry, any closing thoughts?
It has been a pleasure to have you on the show. I will send you your vocal print right away, and you are welcome to let people know where they can jump on and download this program for themselves.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Sherry, and thank you, Richard. I had so much fun on the show today.
That was great. Thanks very much. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you on Tuesday, where we're talking about something. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.